From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
And it is the Boomer and the Babe Show, another edition. It is Tuesday, May 15th, 2012, broadcasting from our studios in the Feeding Arizona complex in Youngtown, Arizona, also home of the Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free. Little information that I try to give now at the beginnings of these shows, and that is that the Valley View Community Food Bank is going to be moving to brand new and larger new location, brand new location for them, and very large. It's a former old Safeway store, 36,000 square feet of food bank and thrift store that they're going to be able to put together. So they can certainly use assistance, be it by donations of money or clothing or food, more importantly food, and also volunteers. So if you're interested in making any kind of a donation, large or small, no matter what it is that you'd like to have him consider, and they accept just about everything, please give them a call, and you can contact them through their website. It is valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. Ask for Jesse Ramirez. He is the founder and the executive director of the food bank, and he'll be more than happy to talk to you about what it is that that you might be able to do and how you can get involved with them. And I'm Pete Peters. Deborah Brown is still on assignment. I keep saying she's on assignment. And boy, am I I hope she gets her assignments done. Let's put it that way, so she can come in and enjoy some of these great guests that we've been having. We want to remind you about everything that we do as well. We just are in the process of publishing our next edition, our most recent edition of Boomer Experience Speaks Online Magazine. Go to boomerthebabe.com. You can sign up for that. It's absolutely free. It comes to your inbox every month. We also do a little consulting. We publish ebooks and mini books. Many of our ebook authors are also show hosts on the Boomer the Babe Network here on Blog Talk as well. So we hope you'll join their shows and listen to their shows as well as ours. Always some good information to be had by some of those folks. Today we have a very interesting subject that we're going to be talking about. The young lady that's here with me in studio is Kristen Mernia. I hope I pronounced that right.
You did. It was perfect.
Okay. That was a good guess. And she's going to be talking about donations. And it's a different kind of a donation than what you might be thinking of at first. This is a body donation, a donation of your body, and we're going to hear all about that and what's involved with it and who they can accept the donation from and what are the stipulations and what happens to the body after they're done with it. And it'll be not meant to be a morbid discussion. It'll hopefully be a nice, relaxing, and easy discussion, but it's a topic that might be of some concern to some people. Mm-hmm. So we want to let you know that up front. But in the meantime, Kristen Mernia, welcome to the Boomer the Babe Show.
Thank you.
Well, we're glad to have you here.
I'm glad to be here. And I have a quick question.
Yes.
So since Deborah's not here, does that mean I get to be the babe for the day?
Well, you're certainly welcome to be the guest babe, yes.
All right.
Absolutely. You qualify in all aspects as being a babe, so so we'll say that I've got a guest babe. That's wonderful. This has happened before, and it's always enjoyable for me to be having a babe sit across the table.
Oh, good. Well, I'm happy to be the guest babe today. Thank you so much for having us.
Kristen, before we get into the meat of the matter, so to speak, talk to me a little bit about who you are and what you've done in the past. You're awfully young, but give me 2 minutes if you have 2 minutes of history.
I will do my very best. Well, and you know, funny enough, it's my birthday today.
Oh, so happy birthday.
I'm not quite as young as you might think.
Okay.
My background has been mainly in nonprofit work, and sort of an underlying theme of all of the different jobs that I've had has been wanting to help. So for me, I've worked at an animal shelter. I've worked at a nonprofit public policy institute, places where I feel like I can give back and make a difference. And that's how I found Science Care. And Science Care, of course, is the whole body donation program that we're talking about today. And I have been with Science Care for over 4 years. And I am the director of communications there. So I manage all of the sort of public talk back and forth. We have a pretty active online presence. So we talk a lot with the people that email us, the people that join our Facebook and Twitter pages, and then, of course, radio shows like this one.
And that's what brings you here today?
That's what brings me here today.
How long has ScienceCare been around? What are we talking about as far as how long they've been in business and so on and so forth?
We'll actually be celebrating our 12th birthday in June. So ScienceCare started in the year 2000, and it was started actually by Jim and Josie Rogers, and they're both still very active within the organization. Jim's the CEO and the president of the company, and he was in the business of funeral planning. And he would be asked by people all the time, I want to donate my body to science, but I don't know how to do that. So he started researching it, and after a couple of years of researching, he actually decided, with Josie 7 months pregnant, mind you, decided to take the leap and start his own company doing whole body donation. And it has grown significantly. We now have facilities in, one, two, three, five states.
Wow.
And we're headquartered right here in Phoenix, but we have a facility in Colorado that does both donation and medical training. We have a medical training facility in New Jersey. We have a donation facility in Florida. And actually, I'm excited to be able to announce today for the first time we're opening a medical training facility in California.
Wonderful. Wonderful. When people speak of body donation, or donating their body to science, that can mean different things to different people and different organizations,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Absolutely.
What are some of the things that it can mean? Not what it means to you folks, but what mm-hmm. are some of the things that people are thinking of when they say, I'm going to donate my body to science?
That's really a great question, because we find that people do tend to be confused on what whole body donation really is. And most often we are confused with organ donations. So I want to make it really clear that what we do is for non-transplant. So what ScienceCare is doing is for medical research and education. And organ donation is for transplant. So that's where actually a person is having a part of their body, a kidney or something like that, transplanted into another living person. Whole body donation, on the other hand, is for medical research and medical education. And we also get confused a lot with universities. So there are medical colleges throughout the country. The closest one to us here in Phoenix is the University of Arizona that has a donation program. And we are confused with them because, and I think it's a pretty easy confusion, to be honest, because we do work with a lot of universities as well. So universities that don't have a body donation program will work with us to make sure that they're able to train their doctors at their universities.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not a medical college. We're a separate organization.
So you're a separate organization, but you said also that you have a medical division, was it?
We do provide medical training facilities. So part of what we do is actually help to train the doctors and to do the medical research programs at our facilities. So we have facilities like, for example, the one in Arizona has a huge laboratory space where doctors will actually come in, set up all of their instrumentation, do whatever they need to train their docs right there on location, if you will, and they travel to our different facilities to do that. Or we would be providing tissue for training facilities throughout the country and, in fact, throughout the world where doctors are training on tissue. And this could mean a lot of different things. This could mean if there's a new technique for hip replacements, for example, and doctors need to learn how to do that before they're actually doing it on you and I.
Right.
So they need to learn how to do that new technique or how to use that new device. They need to learn how to do that on actual human tissue. It's been proven over and over that actually learning on actual human tissue is, it doesn't even compare to any of the other options. And the other options would be computer simulations, looking at books, plastic models. It's not the same and it's not comparable. And that's the reason why there is such a need and such an importance placed on whole body donation for medical research and education.
How many whole body donation companies are there?
There are probably about 15 in the whole United States. However, most of them are unaccredited, which means they're not accredited by the American Association of Tissue Banks. Now, it's not mandatory to be accredited by the AATB. Perhaps someday that will be the case, but it's not right now. Right now there are three organizations that are accredited by the AATB, ScienceCare being the first organization to be accredited by them, and two others have followed suit.
Now, I don't know. Maybe there's a misnomer, or maybe it actually does happen in some with some organizations, mm-hmm. that the person dies, they can take any old body, so to speak. I mean, I'm dead. I passed away naturally or whatever. Somebody comes in and grabs me and takes me away, and I'm never to be seen from again. Are there companies that operate that way?
Not that I know of, actually. In fact, that's probably one of the biggest myths around. When you join a registry for donation, and I'm talking about organ donation, whole body donation, no matter what, even if you're joining the registry, that simply means that you are putting your wishes down on paper, that this is what I would like to do when I pass away. That does not mean that you are going to be an organ donor. That does not mean that you're going to be a whole body donor. Now, for ScienceCare, we have pretty broad criteria, so we are able to facilitate donation for most of the people that want to donate, but we do have certain medical and suitability criteria that we need to look at for every person. So I like to think of ScienceCare as sort of a matchmaker for doctors. We're looking at a person's medical history and all of the various things that they've had done within their life, their surgeries, their diseases, all of the things that have happened to make that person who they are health-wise. And then we're also looking at our medical research criteria. So we have any number of medical research projects going on at the time that that person passes. So what we do for every person is we look at each individual uniquely and try to match up their medical history with our medical research criteria. And if there's a match, which there most often is, we then go ahead and facilitate the donation, transport that person to our facility. And actually, one of the other myths that you mentioned was that you're never heard from again, if you will. ScienceCare actually provides cremated remains back to the family in about 3 to 5 weeks.
Really?
So it's a very quick process, and I think the reason why people are confused about that is because with medical colleges, it takes much longer, or they don't return cremated remains. It kind of depends around the country. It's usually between 1 to 3 years if they do return cremated remains, or they might not. So.
I am reminded, you mentioned that, and I am reminded of a movie, and I don't know the name of it. It's an old movie, and even though it's your birthday today and you're older, you probably don't remember it. Maybe you do, I don't know. But it was a mystery, murder mystery, whatever, and somebody was in a medical lab where they were doing research on bodies, and as a scare thing in the movie, all of a sudden this body comes up on it like what it's thought to be formaldehyde, and it's sitting there in this tank. That's not how it's done, is it?
It's really not. And that's probably a good thing, because that sounds a little scary. I'm not sure I'd want to watch that movie.
It scared the heck out of it. Whoever was in the movie, and it was intended to, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, well, that's where Uncle George went. We're looking for Uncle George, and he's right here.
Most of the donors at ScienceCare are not embalmed. I'm not going to say every single one, because we do projects for some of the universities, for example, who are looking for bodies that have been embalmed. But for the most part, they're not.
So when a person dies, and it's indicated that they're going to be donated, their remains will be donated to your organization or any organization, I would guess. They're somehow tagged via their driver's license or anything else, or their last will and testament, whatever it might be. Walk me through. I mean, it happens in a hospital, let's say. What does that person then just go to the morgue and just waits at the morgue for somebody to come and get them? Mm-hmm. How does that work?
So a lot of it does depend, you're right, on where that person passes away. So in a hospital setting, usually if we're talking about a person that is a little bit older, a lot of times we deal with people that are on hospice care.
Mm-hmm.
If they're on hospice care, we can actually do a medical screening of that individual before they actually pass away.
and determine if there's a match. But if someone has not called us ahead of time and they're calling us at the time of passing, the very first thing that we would do is over the phone, we do a medical screening to determine if there's a match. And you remember I talked about the match between the person's medical history and our medical research criteria. So that's the very first thing that we do, is see if we can determine if there is a match. Once we determine that there is a match, then we move forward with arranging transportation arrangements. So we would transport that person from the hospital that they're in to our medical training facility, or excuse me, our donation facility. And it sort of depends on what state a person's in. If we're talking about in Arizona, then we would send a driver there to pick that person up. If we're talking about another state, you're right, they probably would be in the hospital morgue until we would work with a local funeral home to help us out with the transport. So they would actually transport that person. Let's say it's in Nebraska and they are in a hospital when they pass away. They would probably go to the hospital morgue at that point, where then the local funeral home that we've contracted with would come and pick that person up from the morgue and then take them to either their facility or take them right to the airport, where we would fly them to one of the science care facilities. Once they get to science care, we then do our tissue procurement. So that's when we are procuring the tissue or taking the tissue that is going to be used for medical research and education, cremating the parts that are left, and then returning the ashes back to the family in about a month.
Wow. So when the body arrives, you have the health history of the body, because that's all done in your evaluation process early on. So if somebody's had a series of heart attacks, they've had a heart transplant, they've had stage 3-4 kidney disease, they've had a gallbladder removed, whatever the case might be, they've had cataracts taken care of. You know that already.
You got it. And funny enough, all of the things that you mentioned would not be reason in and of themselves as a disqualifier, if you will, for donation.
Really?
In fact, most of the diseases and ailments that people have nowadays are fine for donation, for whole body donation. Now, let's not confuse it with organ donation, which is and has to be much more strict, because
sure,
they're putting things in live people. We're simply using them for research and education. So heart disease, cancer, diabetes, cataract surgery, kidney disease, all of those things that you mentioned are not going to be rule outs in and of themselves for donation. What we look at when we're talking about things that won't work, that won't match up with our medical research criteria, first and foremost is going to be contagious diseases. So we're talking about HIV, AIDS, hepatitis C, active tuberculosis, active syphilis, active MRSA, things that could potentially be passed from that donor to either a science care staff member or to a medical researcher who's actually working with touching the tissue. Secondly, we look at suitability. So that's where the matchmaking part really comes in. When we're trying to determine, does this person meet the criteria that we need so that we can make sure that their wishes are carried out, honoring their intent of donation and providing tissue to medical researchers so that they can do their research projects on cancer, on Alzheimer's, on training doctors on new devices and new techniques.
Is there ever, other than the AIDS and communicable diseases that you mentioned and the things that are fecal contaminants, so to speak, to the people that are doing the research and the workers there, other than those types of folks, are there any other things that maybe I have signed up to donate my body to your service, and at the time that I die, you don't need me? Does that happen very often?
Not very often, but it does happen. And again, I'll just go back to what I was talking about earlier, which is when you join a registry or you choose to be a donor, just because that is your wish, it is not a guarantee. That's the same with organ donation.
Sure.
So people that, you know, put on their driver's license, the little heart or whatever it is in each state, that I want to be a donor, it doesn't necessarily mean that they will be. It's simply saying that if possible, I would like to donate my organs for transplant or, because you actually can do both, you can be an organ donor for transplant and a science care whole body donor. it's simply stating your wishes. So there are going to be times when someone just doesn't match that research criteria that we have, and that's why we have to do it at the time of passing or just before in the case of hospice patients, because that's when their medical history is finished. We really don't know until that point if there's going to be a true match.
So it's conceivable that I could go to my grave on my headstone and could say nobody loved me in life, and not even the donation coordinator.
Well, I certainly would not put that on your headstone, but hey, that's up to your family, right? You better work that out.
Nobody loved me. Not even the donor.
Tell people that we encourage people to have a backup plan.
Sure.
And that's for any kind of arrangements like this. And a backup plan, though, it doesn't have to be anything fancy. It can simply be letting your family know, if donation doesn't happen, I would like to be cremated, and this is a funeral home that I like.
Sure.
That's a backup plan, and that is a perfectly fine, safe backup plan.
Sure.
What we also do in the cases where donation doesn't happen is we help people find those backup plans. So a lot of times people haven't set up a backup plan, and they're looking to ScienceCare for some answers. So we have relationships with a lot of local funeral homes and cremation societies that we can direct people to help them if donation's not an option in those cases.
So you will. I'm intrigued by the fact that you do the transport. You do the certainly the work that you do, physical work that you do, and then you contract. I'm assuming contract or have somebody at these locations that do the cremation, and then you ship the ashes back. That in and of itself is a win-win for everybody. I would think it seems to be anyhow. To my way of thinking, I mean it's. I mean if I met my maker and I have it in my wishes that you folks are going to take care of me and what's going to happen, and then when it's all said and done that Deborah gets a coffee can with my ashes in it, that's all I wanted anyhow was a coffee can with my ashes in it. So along the way, there's a short stop along the way, but it does some good.
Absolutely. But what we always say about donation is that it's probably the most individual and personal choice that a person will ever have to make. Because not everybody feels the way that you do, and that's okay. There are plenty of people that do feel like that, that believe that their body is just a body, and that they want to make a difference. They want to be used for research purposes so that in a way they can go on and still be of help to the future generation. And I certainly feel like that. I don't think I could work here if I didn't. But there are plenty of people that don't, and that's perfectly okay with us. We would never want somebody to donate if they didn't want to.
Yeah, this is not the body snatchers here.
You got it, yeah.
The individuals that come to you after they've passed, and you said there are different projects, how many different projects are you working on right now? How many research projects are going on right now, would you guess?
Wow, I don't know the answer to that, but how about we just say a lot? There, it really is a lot. We did some a project about a month ago or 2 months ago where we were working with a company that was improving cochlear implants, so implants that will help deaf people hear better. And in fact, sometimes for the first time hear. So the work that they're doing is on improving those implants to make them even better. And I don't know if you've ever seen any of like the YouTube videos of people that put in the implant and then they hear for the first time. It's really amazing. It is so touching to see people hear things that you and I probably take for granted. That's the very first time she's heard her voice. That's the first time he's ever heard a dog bark. Things like that are unimaginable.
Go ahead.
Well, now I lost.
You were saying that things like that are unimaginable, but I would think that let's play something or other here. I don't know what we're going to play, but I come to you as a body that's going to be donated. You would gather possibly a joint to do joint work
potentially.
It could be my brain, whatever the heck it might be.
It could be skin tissue. It could be cells from inside the body. If they're looking at the cellular level, it could be blood. There's any number of different parts of the body that can be used for research. It's actually pretty incredible the use that someone can be after they pass away. And these are things that I didn't know about 5 years ago. If you had asked me, what can the human body be used for after we are done with it?
Mm-hmm.
But it amazes me every day the things that are able to be done. We work with the Phoenix Fire Department frequently where they are training their paramedics on how to do life-saving procedures like creating an airway. They're not doctors, they're paramedics, but they're sometimes the first responders to an accident. And if a young kid has been hit by a car and they need to create an airway, well, you better hope that they've had some really good training, because that's a very difficult procedure to actually open up an airway for a person to be able to breathe.
Here again, it's not like the movies when you give me the pen.
Exactly.
Stab them in the throat. You know?
It's a pretty intricate procedure. So we work with that fire department to help them train their paramedics on how to do so using actual human tissue, which, as we've talked about, is far superior to the plastic mannequins, which is what they were using before they started working with us.
Let's talk about this, and I don't know, maybe it's not something, maybe it's out of your realm, but you see these things that are on the movies and television, and somebody's got a collapsed lung, so they puncture him in the lung, and they put a piece of a garden hose in there, and a guy starts breathing normally again. But they use a pencil, and they stab a hole in his throat so he can have an airway, or anything along those lines. Do those types of things and the other myths or things that you see in the movies, do they go a long way to making your job more difficult?
They don't really impact my job per se. They probably impact doctors a lot more, where doctors are, you know, they have people coming to them saying, well, can't you just stick a pencil in there and we can fix it? So I would sort of be on your camp, which is that probably most of what you're seeing in the movies and TV is not exactly accurate. It's probably based on something fundamentally sound, but is it entirely medically accurate or practical? I would hasten to say probably no. However, I'm not a doctor, so who knows? Maybe a pencil can cure.
Maybe a pencil can give you an airway.
Who knows? It's the Dr. MacGyvers out there, I suppose. But
well, I think the key to the whole thing is when you have to remember that these people are, after all, actors.
You got it.
They're acting like a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other thing, too. I mean, there are so many things that go on in everyday life. The guy standing there with a white smock and a stethoscope hanging around his neck, talking about some medication somewhere, and they have to put the disclaimer out there that says this is not an actual doctor, he's an actor.
Right.
I mean, it just, because people are so easily swayed.
Absolutely.
Easily swayed.
And we see a lot of doctors at ScienceCare just at our medical training facilities. I'm not even counting all of the medical training facilities that we work with around the world, but just at our medical training facilities, our 1, 2, 3 facilities, we train tens of thousands of doctors every year. So to me, that's pretty amazing that so many doctors are actually able to learn a new technique or to be able to learn about the human body. It's a pretty great thing that so many of. So there are real doctors out there. They're not all actors.
Yes, there are. But they're all practicing medicine.
Yep.
It's like my son-in-law practices law. I said, you ever going to get it right?
That's a good one. I like that.
How about you personally? Have you personally seen some of these various things mm-hmm. that are done? Have you been present to watch some of this research being taken place?
I have. I was fortunate enough to be able to attend a training program for doctors at not a ScienceCare medical training facility, at another training facility. And they were working on a robotic I'm not sure the right word to call it, perhaps a robotic device that would assist with knee implants, which is a very common surgery. And the robotics were able to minimally invasively do the surgery, whereas before doctors would be doing it with their hands and scalpels, and the stitches were huge. The scars were huge. The recovery time took a long time. And now with this new minimally invasive surgery, they were able to get in and out, do what they needed to do, and not upset the patient in terms of recovery. The patient recovered quicker, they had less pain, they were able to get back on their feet much quicker. And I was able to witness doctors actually training on using this device and talk, you know, just hearing the talk among them where doctors were looking at each other and saying, wow, this could help so many of my patients. That was a pretty neat thing for me to see.
It's interesting you happened to choose that you were there. There's a physician that we had on that he specializes in joint replacements, particularly the knee. And he was talking about something that the way the knee replacement is now being manufactured, mm-hmm. and they're being manufactured by computer. The measurements are being taken by computer, and so it's not a case of opening the drawer and saying this one looks like the right one. We'll take this one out.
Exactly.
And it used to be the case that a woman's knee never a woman's knee. It was just a small man's knee.
Mm-hmm.
But now, what happens apparently with this particular procedure is they order up the required knee or the replacements for the knee, replacement parts for the knee. They're computer generated, they're CAD-CAM produced, and the whole nine yards, and they come sealed, hermetically sealed, sterilized, including custom instruments for that knee,
wow.
for that person. And they open it up in the room, in the operating room, and at that point then they implant the knee, and they get almost to the point of being able to do it as an outpatient.
Wow, that's, you know,
I think that stuff comes from possibly some of the things that you're talking about.
It definitely does. In fact, I'm trying to see if they have it up on our website yet, but we have a place on our website called Research Stories, and we go in depth about some of the research, and I publish this once a month. So one of the stories that we recently published was about just that, this sort of customized implant that before was a one size fits all, and that's so not the case in most people. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm sure my knees look a lot different than the next person's.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and my knee would never, what would go into my knee would never go into
right?
yours. Or it would go, but they'd have to take out extra bone, or they'd, you know, whatever. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
You know?
So instead of working against the individual, they're now starting to work with the individual and having these customized implants and customizing treatments. It's really an exciting advancement.
Are there any research that you can think of that then you can actually see the benefit of the research that you can say, oh wow, I saw them doing that, and this is what came of it.
Yeah. Yes and no. A lot of our clients prefer to remain anonymous, so we don't talk about a lot of them by name. However, so we sort of get to see it. We can't always talk about the exact results by client, if you will, because they've chosen to remain anonymous.
You're talking about the
medical clients, yep, the people that are making these advancements and results.
Gotcha.
We don't always get to brag about the things that happen on their end, but we do get to see it. And we get to talk about it in more of a generalized way, that Science Care Donors contributed to cancer research. Science Care Donors contributed to Alzheimer's research. There was a neat project that happened recently where they were looking at cerebrospinal fluid as an indicator for early onset Alzheimer's disease. Pretty amazing, actually, the things that they were able to do with simple fluid that's found in the spine. They were able to predict Alzheimer's, which has, I'm sure, or is going to lead to advancements in that disease treatment.
Hopefully eradication.
Let's hope so.
I mean, my father passed away from the complications of Alzheimer's, so I mean, I know firsthand what that's all about.
Yeah, my grandfather too. It was very difficult.
It is
extremely difficult.
So, but it must be rather gratifying to know that you're working for an organization that you can see the benefit of what you are doing, which is passing out the word as far as this is a possibility. Go ahead and do this, and then this might lead to whatever. And you can cite examples of things that your organization has done that has led to improvement.
It's for me, it's what makes me passionate about what I do. Mm-hmm. And for most people, maybe thinking about the idea of whole body donation being something that they're passionate about, but for me, it works. I love what I do, and I brought some letters with me. I get to read letters from families every day that write us a letter and that say, "This donation gave me peace. I was able to find peace with my husband's death because that he gave back in this way."
And that's interesting you say it that way, too, because this we're not talking about the soul of the person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you believe, if a person believes that the soul goes on, then the soul is gone on. In other words, that's the way I look at it. The soul is gone on. It's no longer contained in the body, because if the soul was contained in the body, the soul would decompose just like the body. So if you believe that the soul goes on, if you believe there's another plane, a higher plane, what you're really doing is you're giving somebody else conceivably the gift of a longer life.
Absolutely.
Or a more enjoyable life. So that aspect of what you do and that discussion would also be something that we could talk about. It would be very interesting talk about at length, number one, and we should almost do it on our Exploring Faith show.
Oh, that would be very interesting. And in fact, we talk about religion quite a bit, in that many people believe that my religion prevents me from donating. But actually, most religions celebrate donation as a way to give back. And there are even some in the Jewish faith, for example, there's a teaching that says if you can help a person, if you can save a life, not you should do it, you must do it. So most religions actually celebrate and affirm organ and tissue donation, which is very interesting to me because I never would have thought that. I would have thought, well, my religion doesn't allow that, or most religions don't allow that. But in fact, it's exactly the opposite.
I've been learned. I don't want to get into this to be a religious conversation. I have those with Pastor John Mayer on the second and fourth Wednesday, by the way.
Ah, nice plug. I like it.
There you go. But we get into some pretty interesting conversations, and that would be an interesting one to have with regard to the disposal of human remains and what it means to various churches.
Absolutely.
Or that he knows of, or we can determine what it means to various churches. That would be a very interesting conversation. Why don't we get into a couple of these letters, if you don't mind. You said you brought some letters with you from some people that have...
I did. I brought a couple. We have people that send us just letters out of the blue, and then we also have on our website a way to share your story. We found that a lot of people get a lot of peace and a lot of stress relief out of sharing what they went through. So we have a way that you can share your story, and then we post your story on our website. So let me see. Let me find a good one. Oh, this is a nice one. This is from Babette. And she says, "Dear Science Care, thank you for caring for my loved one, and I hope you were able to learn from him. Everyone who knew him learned from him. His wishes to be donated to science was decided toward the end, and I'm glad he made that choice. So many people are getting cancer, young and old. It is hard to watch people die and leave behind family and friends. If you have learned anything, I would be honored to know." And we actually do send a letter to families about a month after the donation, letting them know the types of projects that their loved one might have been involved in.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And actually, at the year anniversary, this is sort of a new thing for us. 1 year after the donation happens, we plant a tree in a forest of need in honor of that donor.
Wow.
And it's through the Arbor Day Foundation, so every year they choose a forest of need, and this year is the Seminole State Forest. So donors from 2011 are being honored this year in the Florida Seminole State Forest that was damaged by wildfires in 2007. So we are helping to rebuild that forest through the donors.
In any given year, how many people or in this case, trees, have you planted to memorialize somebody?
You know, we have planted thousands of trees over the years. We've planted over 10,000 trees in honor of our donors over the many years that we've been here. And we actually have, it's pretty amazing when I look at sort of numbers like this, we have over 57,000 people that have joined the Science Care Donor Registry that have said, I want to, when I pass, this is what I would like to do. This is my first choice.
Well, did you bring an application form with you?
I did not, but you can actually do it online. We just last month started online registration, so people can actually join the donor registry through our website.
Well, it seems like the right thing to do.
It is for many people.
Mm-hmm. It is. Any other letters?
I have as many as you want.
You got good ones. All right.
All right, let me see. Let me get a good one. Oh, this is a nice one. It's a little hard to read, so bear with me. To the founders and staff, I want to thank all of you for giving me all the updates on what was done with my husband's body. I have found great comfort in knowing his death has come to some good purpose. All of the staff, from the first phone call to his body being brought back to me, has been so kind. Words are beyond telling you how grateful I am to you. I truly hope more people will start donating their bodies. I truly love the gift you sent. I will cherish it. When we send the cremated remains back to the families, we actually send a little pyramid with the cremated remains. So I think that's what she's referring to. We don't give any other gifts, so I guess that, mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have had people on this show because it is a Boomer and the Babe show, and because we, all of us that are my age, our age, not your age, my age, are dealing with ourselves and our own mortality, mm-hmm. and not always willingly facing it. And in addition to that, we also are dealing with our parents passing and various illnesses along the way that eventually claim them. And we've had any number of people. We've had people from hospice. We've had people from an urn company that makes custom urns for cremation. I mean, she has some urns that are $15,000 for a cremation urn. That's absolutely phenomenal. I mean, they're all pieces of art. They are all done by artisans and artists, sculptors. It's just woodworkers. A wooden urn that is just phenomenal to look at. Heck, I don't care if there's ashes in it. Just put it up on my mantle. But I mean, we're touching all areas of this, and this is certainly an area that should be given some thought by people. I'm glad that you're here to bring the message. Why don't we mention the young lady that actually was the catalyst for this, Kimberly.
Tiffany.
Tiffany, I'm sorry. Tiffany spoke at an AARP meeting that, mm-hmm. that I happened to be at, and very, very good speaker, very well spoken and very intelligent, and made this subject, which some people can see as morbid, some people can see as almost taboo. We don't talk about mm-hmm. that thing. Made it very acceptable and made it very doable. Makes it something that you can actually put your hands around, your head around. And I'd like to thank her for that. And of course,
I will pass on your words. That's so nice.
Yes, please do. Are there any things that you'd like that we didn't talk about? I know we had a list of questions somewhere, and I don't know what the heck I did with them. But I mean, was there anything else that?
The one thing we didn't talk about was cost. It's a pretty easy discussion because there isn't a cost. There is no cost to donation. What we do is Science Care takes care of the transportation, the cremation, and the return of the ashes in about 3 to 5 weeks. We also file the death certificate at no cost.
Oh.
So all of that's done at no cost to the families or to the donor themselves.
And that transportation is arranged regardless of where that person is when they pass?
Correct. So we take care of the transportation from the place of passing to our medical training facility.
Does that include international travel?
We actually only accept donors from within the United States.
Okay,
so
within the lower 48?
No, actually within all 50 except for, well, it is 48, but not the two you might be thinking of. We cannot facilitate donation from New Jersey or Minnesota. They actually have local laws that prohibit us from transporting a donor out of those states. But within all of the other states, we can.
There's always somebody.
I know. You always got to have a loophole, right?
Yeah, years ago we used to sell a business opportunity, except in Kentucky, wherever it was.
In this case, poor Minnesota and poor New Jersey, unfortunately, get the shaft.
Minnesota's getting that's another story. I want to thank you for coming today and bringing this topic to us. It's been absolutely phenomenal and interesting, very interesting. Are there any things that you'd like to add as far as how people can get hold of you? Give us your website, any contact information.
Absolutely. So our website's pretty easy, sciencecare.com. And I mentioned before that you can go online and actually join the registry through the website. If you just click on the red button that says Join Registry, that's how you do it, and it's pretty simple. We also have a 24-hour phone line, so we are always available 24 hours, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And that phone number is 1-800-417-3747. And then you can always reach us at our email address, which I actually answer. So you can, if you want to talk to me directly, you can just email info@sciencecare.com.
info@sciencecare.com, and that's you.
That's me.
Just change your name to Info.
Yes, I am Miss Info.
There you go. Well, you're a very charming Miss Info, and I'm certainly glad that you came into the studio today and made it very enjoyable to have a guest.
Thank you so much. I really did enjoy speaking with you, and I hope that people learned a little bit, and I welcome any questions if anyone has questions after this.
Okay, very good. Thanks again.
Thank you so much.
And you've been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show today, and as always, we try to bring you good conversation and information. I think we probably took care of that today with our conversation with Kristen Marnia from
Science Care.
It's just Science
Care. Science Care.
Just
yep.
From Kristen Marnia from Science Care, and you can get hold of them at sciencecare.com. Okay. And go ahead and take a look around and see everything that they've got going on, and consider. Whole body donation. It can only go for a good cause, and it might make you feel better, and your loved ones that are left behind feel better as well. You can listen to the Boomer the Babe every day here Monday through Friday from 10 o'clock till 11. That's 10 o'clock Pacific time. Remember, we do much more than host this radio show. Check us out at boomerthebabe.com. Please sign up for our online magazine, Boomer Experience Speaks. We want to make sure that everybody has a good day today and make the second half of your life the best half of your life, including by registering for sciencecare.com. So that would make a lot of people's days much easier, because they take care of just about everything there is to take care of at the time of your passing. So as I said, make sure the second half of your life is the best half of your life, and we will be talking to you again real soon with another great guest tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Show where we bring interesting conversations to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.